Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks very much for joining us, everybody. It's a pleasure to have you here. We're live on Close Up Radio, and we're also excited to welcome wastewater expert Bono Dixon joining us from Berkeley, California. You know, public health and safety is absolutely critical for all communities to thrive. Besides doctors and nurses taking care of health needs, you must be guaranteed protection from the spread of infectious diseases due to environmental hazards and perils that are a threat to our well-being. That's why a professional sanitary engineer responsible for proper handling of sewage as well as the sanitary treatment of sewage is necessary to keep us safe from contamination, impurities, and industrial pollution. Bono Dixon has been a sanitary engineer for over 50 years, a registered civil engineer, an expert witness, and an independent consultant. He says his role as a professional engineer is focused on helping maintain public health by ensuring the safe handling of sewage. His work largely focuses on potable water and sewage treatment that guarantees disease prevention. And by keeping himself well-versed on public safety and the health laws, he can also make certain sewage and hazardous materials, he makes sure that they are being handled and disposed of properly. But always also a professional engineer experienced in all facets of studying, designing, and constructing water, sewage, and stormwater facilities. He has completed approximately 300 water, wastewater, and stormwater projects and has partaken in the construction phase of nearly 20 water and wastewater projects. Besides his engineering work, he also performs a sundry of forensic engineering and expert witness work. And in the role, he provides information and legal testimony for attorneys to help them comprehend and reach resolutions in legal cases. Much of this work is focused on sewage overflows into buildings, as well as failures to disclose septic system issues when properties are sold. It's really a fascinating conversation we have in store for you. Thanks again for joining us here on Close Up Radio. Let's welcome our very special guest, Bono Dixon, joining us again from Berkeley, California. Well, thank you very much for joining us here on the show. It is a pleasure to have you here.
My pleasure, sir.
You know, it's a fascinating topic, and I'd love to delve in a little bit deeper in terms of what initially sparked the interest and inspiration for you to want to initially go into this line of work. What are some of those things that led you to becoming an engineer and that inspired you in doing the work?
Well, I wanted to be in something that I was a solid science rather than just kind of speculative sort of stuff, and something that would get me out of doors. So that attracted me to civil engineering. Later, I went back and got a master's degree in sanitary engineering, which is a subset of civil engineering, and the focus of my career has been on water and wastewater.
So in that realm, let's see if we can maybe for the audience listening define what a sanitary engineer actually does. Tell us about some of the day-to-day work that you do.
Well, sanitary engineering is kind of an old-fashioned term, and it shouldn't be confused with sanitation engineer. Engineer usually is a garbage man. But sanitary engineering is a subset of civil engineering that deals with water and wastewater, generally. So I've done more work on the sewage side than on the potable water side, but I have done both.
It's really, again, fascinating work that you do. Your role as a civil engineer as well. Let's talk about that. Define that for us.
Civil engineering has several different fields. It covers water and wastewater. It has transportation, surveying as a part of it, structural engineering as a part of it. So civil engineering covers a wide range of sort of things. But anything in the built environment that's reasonably complicated probably involves a civil engineer. If you are going to be an engineer, you want to be registered in one or more states. I believe only one state registers people as sanitary engineers. So most sanitary engineers are actually registered as civil engineers.
That's fascinating. You know, people that are in this kind of work, let's talk a little bit about advice maybe you would give young people who want to go into this line of work.
Well, I would say to them that engineering in general is a place where you can make a living. If you're going to, so many, I see young people go to school and they get weird degrees in, you know, Egyptian hieroglyphics or something, but there are no jobs for that sort of thing. In particular, in civil engineering, water and wastewater is not a fad. It's not like the hula hoop or something that's going to go away. There will always be a need for sanitary engineers because water and wastewater are going to be with us forever.
Right, exactly. Let's talk also, branch out to your work as an expert witness. Tell us about some of the extraordinary work you do as an expert witness.
Yes, I got into this later in my career. I had a good bit of experience. And what I do as an expert witness is I try to explain in court or to the lawyers the technical realities of a case so that the legal system can deal with something on a rational basis. Some years ago, there was a famous case in which an attorney claimed a Twinkie defense for somebody, claiming that the guy was not sane because he had been eating these Twinkie cupcake things. And that's just nonsense. We see that occasionally in court, but most lawyers are fairly straightforward. But, you know, you've got to understand the scientific and technical realities of a situation, what really happened if the court's going to come to a reasonable decision in a case. And my role as an expert witness is to present that sort of information.
What's maybe some examples of some of the work that you've done that maybe you can share with us to show people how this really works?
I'll share a little bit about a case that's actually active, so I don't want to identify the case. Sewers, gravity sewers, you know, the sewage flows downhill, and had a case in which a house, which was kind of on top of a hill, was flooded with sewage, and the sewerage agency says that's not physically possible, and under normal hydraulic conditions, that is true. But I have pointed out, and am pointing out, that the house definitely was flooded. It was numbers of witnesses, a huge amount of sewage in the house, cleanup crews and everything else. It's clear that it did happen, but the agency says, well, it can't happen because it would mean the sewage would have to flow uphill. And that is technically correct, but sewers are often hydro-flushed. They have a big nozzle that is dragged up, that pulls itself up the sewer to flush the sewer back. And if it pokes through one root ball or other obstruction, and there's another obstruction further upstream, the hydro-flusher, in fact, can pressurize the sewer line and drive sewage back up into a house. And that's what undoubtedly happened in this case.
What would be another example of the work?
Well, a lot of my expert witness work deals with sewage overflows into houses, and another big area is failure to disclose septic system problems. Another case I have is people sold a house to the buyer, and then shortly after the buyer tried to move into the house, he found that the toilets would not flush, and it became clear that the septic system was defective. Now, a typical septic system has a septic tank, which nowadays typically have two compartments, and the scum and grease and oil floats to the top, and the sediment goes to the bottom. The relatively clear sewage, by no means clean, but relatively clean, goes into the second compartment and then flows off to a soil absorption system. These can take several forms, but the common one is a leach field, a trench with gravel and a perforated pipe in the gravel that distributes the sewage into the soil. The big public health effect of that is it breaks the contact between humans and the sewage, which contains all sorts of pathogens. If you do not maintain a septic system, by meaning pumping the septic tank periodically, the solids and grease and oil will ultimately get distributed into the soil absorption system and clog it up. The leach field will clog up. And when that happens, of course, the system cannot take any more sewage. Often, with some regularity, many of my cases, there has not been full disclosure when the house was sold that there were problems with the septic system. Now, sometimes that's intentional. The seller doesn't want to undergo the expense of fixing the leach field. But very often, it's not intentional. The seller simply did not know anything about it. In many cases, perhaps even most cases, where a house was built, 50 years ago, it has gone through three or four or five owners, and the current owner may not know much about the septic system. In some cases, they don't even know that it exists. I've seen several cases in which a house was sold with a claim that it was connected to the sewer system, when in fact it was not. So it may be that the seller wasn't being devious, but was simply was not knowledgeable about what was going on with the septic system.
That's really something. Gee. You know, your work as an expert witness is incredibly important. Why do you feel it is very important, Bernal?
Well, I like to feel that decisions are made on the basis of good science. And rather than theatrical performances in a lawsuit, if you come down, or emotional responses or something, if you get down to what the real facts are, you got a much better chance of solving the problem.
Which is really important, obviously, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about why do sellers choose to disclose issues with septic tanks?
Well, here in California, I think probably nationwide, as a seller, you're required to do a full disclosure. There's a California Board of Realtors or something like that, four-page questionnaire that is used here. Most states probably have something that's quite similar. One section of that deals with water and wastewater systems in the house. And if there are problems, you are obligated by law to disclose those problems as a part of the selling process. I have often seen places in which the seller merely made some obscure comment, like some problems or something. That's a disclosure. Many times they have simply said that the system works. in the cases I've been involved with, of course, it has not worked, and that leads to a lawsuit. If you have to replace, or it's very difficult to repair a clogged or failed leach field. You typically have to rebuild a new one, which might cost, depending on the circumstances, something in the order of $30,000. If, of course, you don't disclose that and it goes to a lawsuit and have to pay for replacing the leach field, then the cost typically is gets to $100,000 or more. So it's much better to address these issues up front.
Yes. Head on early, absolutely. Septic systems can be quite dangerous, right? Why are they so dangerous?
Well, what goes on there is that there's anaerobic digestion that goes on in the tank. This is the organic solids process. And in doing that, they use up all of the oxygen in the septic tank. Also, they can produce hydrogen sulfide. And, of course, a lack of oxygen and hydrogen sulfide can kill you. So you don't want to go into a septic tank. I've had a number of interesting cases there. I've been involved in two cases in which children fell in the septic tanks and died. I personally, in Massachusetts long ago, rescued a dog from a septic
wow.
tank. This dog was barking and barking and barking. I wonder what was wrong with the dog. And after half an hour or so, I went across the street to the neighbor's house and found that the dog was in the septic tank, standing on his hind legs and just barely had his nose above the water level. What happened there, and I've seen some other cases, in the old days, especially in California, the tops of the septic tanks were made of wood. California redwood, which supposedly lasts forever, but of course it doesn't. So after some 50 years or so, somebody walks by and steps on this plank that covers the septic tank, and the thing collapses, and the person plunges into the septic tank. And that can happen with, even if the septic tank has a concrete top. The hydrogen sulfide that is generated in the digestion of the sewage comes out as a gas, and it dissolves into droplets of moisture on the top of the on the underside of the top of the septic tank. That forms sulfuric acid, which over time will eat the concrete away. So septic tanks can collapse. Regulations in most jurisdictions, if you abandon a septic tank, you're required to fill it up with some inert material. Sometimes that's a one-sack concrete mix, just a concrete slurry. Sometimes it's gravel or something. But you want to fill an abandoned tank up so that the top of it really cannot collapse.
That's really amazing. Wow. So how do you keep the septic system safe and secure, Bernal?
Well, one is if you abandon it, as I mentioned, that you be sure that the tank is filled with something so that the top cannot collapse. Another feature, very often there is no riser. The top of the septic tank is buried below ground. You should have a riser, a manhole that comes up to grade, and the top of that manhole should have a cover that can be locked in place. I've been involved in some cases where people have had the septic tank dug up repeatedly when they needed to inspect it or something. I would advise everyone, if you don't have a riser on your tank, the next time that you have to dig it up, that you put a riser on it. There are numbers of companies that sell these sorts of things. Orenco is one in Oregon. Back east, I believe the name is Zabel, Z-A-B-E-L. If you've got a riser there and you can open the cover, you can look inside and you can tell it, you can actually inspect the thing and do a rational maintenance of the system. If you have to dig it up each time, of course, you're unlikely to do that. And when you sell the house, maybe you even tell the buyer that they have a septic tank, but they often don't even know where the septic tank is. So a riser gives you access and tells you where the tank is. These companies that sell the risers and lids, they have a special kind of bolt on the cover. It requires a special kind of wrench to take the cover off. So you can keep them safe, keep the covers on them, and keep them bolted down correctly. I had a case, one of these child drowning cases, the cover of the thing was just a number of sort of loose boards or something. It was not any sort of manufactured or lockable cover, and the child stepped on it, and the thing broke, and he fell in the septic tank and drowned.
Mm. Wow. What are some other examples of where things can go wrong?
The thing that usually fails in the septic system is usually the soil absorption system, the leach field. The tank itself can ultimately fail, but they last a long time, and they're relatively inexpensive. A few thousand dollars will get a new septic tank. A new leach field, as I said, might cost $30,000 or more, depending on your site conditions.
That's incredible, really. What is a typical day like for you, Bono? You know, when you get a call that either the expert witness work or, you know, even sanitary engineer and civil engineering work, what is a typical day like for you? Or is there no typical day?
I think I might say there's no typical day. An expert witness assignment usually starts with a call from an attorney's office. I'm listed on a number of websites. If you punch in sewer expert or sanitary engineer, my name might pop up in one of these listing services. And then they usually have a paralegal call and give me a brief description of the case, and I tell them whether I think that I am qualified to work with that or not. Usually the attorney calls me, and we discuss the case. I send a resume and so forth, and they get approval from their client to hire me for legal work. Yep. Let me go. I'd like to go over to the topic of sewer overflows. Another major field that I do expert
witness. Just saw that in Florida with the hurricanes that happened, where streets were underwater because the retention ponds in Florida and the sewers were completely overrun with the amount of rainwater that they just couldn't handle it, with Florida being so sandy, and just and for weeks their streets and yards were underwater.
Well, that's the gravity sewer is supposed to be flowing not more than about half full, so that the sewage will flow downhill. But obviously, if the water table is now above the ground level, the sewers won't work very well. A more common problem that I see is that the sewer system clogs. Until about 1960, most of the sewers in the United States were the laterals, the smaller sewer. The lateral is the pipe that comes from your house to the sewer in the street. These were made of vitrified clay pipe, kind of a reddish-colored clay pipe. You've probably seen those.
Yeah.
And they came in short lengths, 3-foot lengths mostly. So there are lots and lots of joints. And in the old days, the joints weren't very good. They just butted the two pieces of pipe together and wrapped a mortar diaper around the joint. But, you know, passing trucks or here in California, earthquakes jiggle the pipes, and that mortar was very brittle and would break apart. So the joints were very leaky, and roots love sewage. Trees just love sewage, so the roots get into the pipes. Thus, you're subject to frequent clogging of the sewer system. If the sewer system clogs, the concept was that the pipe fills up with water. It doesn't flow freely as it's intended to. And as the water level rises, the concept was that it would leak out of the next upstream manhole cover. Well, that's the concept. But a number of houses are lower than the sewer, so that as the water level rises, the overflow point tends to be into the house, usually into the shower pan on the lowest floor. But if there's a lot of flow coming into the sewer, it can actually back up out of this toilet, out of the lavatory even, into the house. And obviously that's catastrophic to flood a house with sewage. To prevent that, the Uniform Plumbing Code calls for a backwater valve. And that's that prevents flow going back into the house as opposed to coming out of the house. Perhaps the best form of that, and a common one, is that it's I'll call it a loose cap clean out. You've probably seen the clean out outside of your house somewhere. It's got a cap screwed onto it. The overflow protection version of that is a wooden ball that sits in the top of the clean out to keep the, and so that if the water level rises, the ball will float and let the sewage escape into the yard rather than going into your house. Often, to keep the ball from wandering off, there's some kind of cage over the top of it, which is often a dome-shaped thing, which looks like a giant mushroom. So these are often called mushroom valves. There are other forms of these backflow prevention devices, swing check valves and so forth, but my favorite is the loose cap clean-out mushroom valve. Another thing that should be done is that the overflow device should be in a box, a manhole, a Christie box, like your water meter in front of your house, so that you can get at it and service it if necessary and tell whether it's working or not. Very often these things are buried. There's no access to them, and now you're on the third owner or fifth owner of the house, and they have no idea that the thing even exists. But a backwater valve is important if you're likely to be flooded. A couple of things there. Most sewerage agencies will inspect your house for you free and tell you whether you need one of these things or not. So you might want to call your sewer agency and ask them to come out and advise you on the thing. I would further advise that if you're putting one of these things in, that you also put in a shutoff valve so that if you arrive home and somehow the house is flooding and so forth, you can run out and actually shut the sewer off. But that's rather rarely done.
It's really fascinating when you take a look at this. We don't think about these things, you know, on a day-to-day basis, but you're there on the ground floor, literally immersed in this, and it's quite extraordinary. Your website, BernardDixon.com, is fantastic, and I encourage folks to connect with it. You've been doing this for over 40 years in all aspects of studying, designing, and constructing water, wastewater, and stormwater facilities, both in the United States and abroad, and over 25 years as a forensic expert witness, experience in more than 100 water, wastewater, sewage, stormwater-related cases. The website for everybody is, and I'll spell it out, BonneauDixon.com, BonneauDixon.com. No, this was really fascinating. I appreciate your coming on the show to tell us all about this incredible work that you do, and hope we get a chance to explore some more down the line. That would be a pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
You are very, very welcome. Happy holidays and enjoy the rest of your day. Wastewater expert Bonneau Dixon is with us here on the show. BonneauDixon.com is the website. This is your host, Jim Masters. Thank you for joining us as well on Close Up Radio. Have a terrific day, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.